it's important to understand that the military aspects of what we're doing is only one aspect of the situation that we're faced with there. Obviously, the diplomatic part of what we do there will be important, as will the economic. As you know, we've frozen assets. We've embargoed things in terms of Gaddafi himself. So the military aspects of what we're doing is only a small part of that. It is, however, obviously something that's very important to everyone. And as you look at what we're doing, it's, I believe, clear what we've been asked to do, and that is protect civilians to the best of our ability and establish a no-fly zone. And as you can see events playing out, that really has not taken very long in terms of the no-fly zone, nor should we have expected it to, given the threat that we face there.
In addition, it seems that the cooperation with the international community is critical.
Well, it is critical. And I would tell you that from the perspective of the United States, and just to go back a little bit, if I may, the investment that we've made in Europe and NATO since the end of World War II in the way that we cooperate with today the 28 NATO nations and the other nations in the region in terms of partnership building, I believe pay off in scenarios like this. And you see that playing out. I read an article that said we flew about 80 sorties yesterday in the no-fly zone. Over half of those were flown by our allies, the French, the British, the Italians. I believe the Danes flew some of those and the Spaniards as well. So the interoperability that we have gained through our cooperation in NATO and the way we have built partnerships, and in fact, some of those countries fly the same equipment. They use the same types of ground equipment. They've been trained not only in air operations in terms of the way we do that to a NATO standard, but also ground operations and logistics as well. So that's been a huge help in terms of what's going on in Libya.
One of the messages that has been resounding through this administration is this is not a U.S. mission, and we are not going to be the primary in this mission. We were the primary, it seems, at first because we have the technology and the firepower. Since then, we have to sort of stand down and hand it over to somebody else. Why is that so important?
Well, Amy, you're exactly right. In the beginning, the United States has some capabilities that no one else in the world possesses. No one else has the type of tanker fleet, for example, that we have today. And we could talk about replacing the tanker fleet also. But I would tell you that capability alone is one that only the United States can bring to the game. One other very important aspect of what we're doing is command and control, and the ability of the United States to command and control an operation, particularly in the initial phases in the stand-up of that operation, getting it organized. However, I would tell you it's totally within the realm of possibility and realistic that this should and that it can and should migrate, if you will, toward a NATO-style type command and control arrangement, and that should be done in the very near future. The commanding general there has said that's going to be critical in terms of the handoff. He's exactly right. But in the beginning, the United States had the command and control capability, for example. If you look at some of the stealth and other classified capabilities that we bring, particularly those in terms of intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, that then helps our allies in terms of getting up on the step. Using the B-2, for example, to be able to disable airfields and other air defense-type capabilities to open the door, if you will, for other non-stealth assets that are flown by some of the other services in the United States as well as our allies has been a big help as well. But I would tell you at this point in time, there's no reason why this shouldn't be able to transition. I think we'll be able to do that smoothly. What it points to, again, is the teamwork and our ability to work with our allies and with our partners in that part of the world. And when you have a consensus like we were given by the United Nations and the Arab League and then to a degree in NATO, then I think you have certainly the legitimacy you need to go do the mission we've been asked to do.
With this mission, there is expense. And there's a mandate from the Defense Secretary to trim costs. How do you reconcile that?
Well, I guess I would ask the question of how do we afford not to, in the case of what the president, you know, has looked at and determined that we need to do. I'm sure there was a debate within the Department of Defense and the administration concerning what the best military advice was and where we stood financially before we went into the operation. The president has made a decision, and the military is carrying that out to the best of their ability. The funding will follow, I'm sure. Now, this will not be without some impact on the funding in the Department of Defense, I'm sure, and as you know, the rest of the nation, given the situation that we're faced with. And the Department of Defense is going to be part of how we solve some of our fiscal issues. So I take your point, and I think it's one that we're going to have to follow very carefully, because it will in some way impact where that money would have otherwise been spent in the Department of Defense.
We are talking with General Howie Chandler. He's retired U.S. Air Force Vice Chief of Staff. You had mentioned the tanker contract, and it's something that we've been following for years. Give me your thoughts about the really protracted contracting process. This was unprecedented, the way this played out.
Yes, we have signed a contract. Now the contractor is going to need to deliver a tanker. The United States Air Force needs a tanker, and the United States military needs a tanker. When I was a commander in the Pacific, we flew aircraft that were about 47 years old. Each one of those aircraft took about 8 hours of maintenance for every hour of flying time. Now, the depot that supports those aircraft did great work in terms of the depot maintenance that they did, but ultimately you maintain those aircraft on the backs of the young men and women on the flight line that have to make those older aircraft fly. I would tell you that there's probably enough blame to go around over the period of that has transpired since we actually began the effort to buy a new tanker. Most people are familiar with how long it has taken. And as I said before, both sides have enough fault to go around, I think. I think what we've seen here is an effort to put all that behind us and get on with building a new tanker. And I'm sure that the contractor is going to be able to do that for us. But it will be important that we continue to do that. And as you know, this is just the first phase of replacing the tankers that we have on the flight line now. If we buy them at the current rate, about 12 to 15 tankers a year, when we pull the last KC-135 off the flight line, assuming we keep them in service, it will be close to 75 years old. We've never flown aircraft to that length of service, so it'll be interesting to see how the aircraft hold up as we do it.
I want to get back to what's going on in the Arab world. They're calling it the Arab Spring, and that perhaps it might not take if the democracy part of it doesn't really take. Give me your thoughts about what it is you've seen in the coverage and in what's been happening on the ground there.
As we take a look at what's going on in the Middle East, I think it's going to be very, very important, no matter how we come out of this, to have a strategy that encompasses the entire region, one that is not strictly focused on one country. Mm-hmm. We have a number of friends in the regions, we've had a special relationship with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, again, since the end of World War II. We have a special relationship, obviously, with Israel. We have a special relationship with the Jordanians, with Egypt. I think it's going to be important that we look at an all-encompassing approach to how we're going to deal with the Middle East and all of the issues that will spring out of this. There's no guarantee that democracy will necessarily come out of the Arab Spring. There's a debate about whether democracy is appropriate, or is it representative government in many cases, or self-determination, because, again, democracy, and I think in large parts in the eye of the beholder. So this will be interesting to see where this goes, but I think the foundation for how we approach this needs to be an all-encompassing approach to how we're going to deal with the Middle East as a whole.
My understanding is that you just retired the first part of this month, but all of these things have been happening in the past couple of weeks. Do you feel like you may be retired too early? Do you want to get back in the game?
Well, I think anyone that serves for 36 years hates to hang the uniform up when you do. But I've had some great opportunities in the 36-plus years that I was able to serve in the Air Force, all the way from flying frontline fighters to being assigned around the world. Probably almost 12 years in my time was spent overseas. My family has enjoyed it. I certainly enjoyed it. As I said before, it's difficult to hang up the uniform when you've done it that long, but it's time for the other folks to take their time at the plate as well. And it's also time to spend some time with the family and do some other things also. So to say I'm unhappy is not necessarily correct, but to say that we miss the Air Force, I think, is true.
And there are a lot of folks in the Air Force who listen to us. Any message for them?
I was very, very fortunate to serve with a great group of men and women for 36-plus years. Today, they're the brightest group that I've seen in our Air Force. They continue to do amazing things, and we continue to ask them to do some very, very difficult things. I would ask them just to keep swinging away as part of the joint team and doing what they do every day, because they do a very, very important mission for this nation, and the nation's counting on them.